In today's episode, we answer one of the questions we get most often at ReachRite. What marketing channels should churches be using in 2020? We came up with the top five places most churches should invest their outreach dollars. We hope it helps your church reach people the right way. You're listening to the ReachRite podcast, the show dedicated to helping pastors and church leaders reach people the right way. Hosted by me, Thomas Costello, and with me as always is my co-host, Ian Hyatt. We're here to help your church see more visitors and grow. Well, hey, party people. Welcome to ReachRite podcast episode number 8. Thanks for being with us here today. I'm Thomas Costello, and with me, as always, is my co-host.
This is Ian Hyatt. Hey.
Hey, Ian. How you doing, man?
Good. I can't believe this is episode 8. We're starting to get up there now.
I know. Plugging right away. And you finally made that move into the new place, hence the echo behind you there.
Hence the echo and hence the no good backdrop. So anyone watching, forgive me for that. I think everyone's, probably most people who will be listening have moved before, so they probably will give me some grace. Yeah,
plenty of grace. This is the coronavirus season. We just started our lockdowns again here in Honolulu. And so hence my hair becoming longer and longer. And they closed down all of our barbershops and salons and all that kind of stuff here. So crazy times we're living in, but we have a good topic for today, I think. I'm looking forward to chatting about it. So the topic of the day is the five most important marketing channels for churches in 2020. So we want to give that to people and just we are in that business of helping churches reach more people, reach them the right way. You and I have been in this industry of helping churches through this since 2006 for you, 2007 for me. Yeah. So we've seen a complete shift in what channels are to be used for marketing. The when we started back then, search engines were in their very infancy, and social media hardly, it was MySpace only when we got started. So and Facebook wasn't selling any ads yet. So
making
all
me
of
feel
the
old.
Well, so, we are old. I saw a post yesterday. Get this. Macaulay Culkin turned 40 yesterday.
I heard about that.
And
my
he
goodness.
Tweeted out, I'm 40. So he was like ruining people's days with that information.
Then he did the little scream.
I don't think he did that. But
no, it wouldn't have come across so kid-like anymore. So
yeah. So, but I mean, let's just share with people. Like, so the company that we kind of grew out of, it's amazing. The things that we used to help churches with, we've always done websites. That's always been our primary. Yeah. And so we're not even going to cover websites as a marketing channel today, because it's not really that. That's like saying your building is a marketing channel, because I think we are in a new digital is default kind of a world right now. So we can't think of it that way. Your website is like your home base for everything.
Yeah.
Man, we worked for a company that used to sell TV commercials to churches, right? Like that's how we, those were the days, right?
They were some interesting days. And there was a lot of excitement around those back in the day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So our story, we were kind of born out of a company that was born out of Joel Osteen's dad. He had this idea to put TV commercials that were as good as Coca-Cola commercials, putting those on TV back in the mid 80s. So John Osteen, he bankrolled our company's first set of TV commercials that long before we were ever there. We were in elementary school when this all happened, I guess. But he bankrolled our first set of TV commercials at that company we worked for. And we put these things on, and they really are cringeworthy to go back and think about them now, right?
Because they were mid 90s to late 90s. And so, you know, if you look at them now, you see mullets and you see bowl haircuts on kids, and they were evangelistic because these were church commercials, right? So, which is great to get the gospel out there. But I guess the method and the delivery of them would be, quite frankly, it's quite humorous now if you look at them. So
It's almost heavy-handed, I would say, some of them. Like, and to all of our watchers or listeners, you can get onto our YouTube channel. We have some of those commercials. We technically own the rights to them now. We don't necessarily think that they're a good fit for hardly any churches right now, but they are. There's something to them that... it's funny, like, so some of them are just so heavy-handed. Like, one is a back when that Got Milk commercial was going around everywhere, right? And so we had a Got Jesus version of it, where a guy jumps off a bridge bungee jumping and his bungee cord breaks. And the question to the audience is, Got Jesus? So I still believe in the principle behind that, that it is, if you die in a bungee jumping accident, it's best to do so with Jesus. But a little heavy-handed, I might say.
Another one that comes to mind, and we won't spend too much time longer here, but they are, it is funny. Another one was where, I guess the father and mother, husband and wife were getting into an argument, and, he must've been five, 6-year-old boys overhearing them. And of course the boy's upset and the dad's storming off. And the kid says at the very end, Dad, you forgot your Bible. And the reason I think that's funny now is because you think about it, I guess, nothing wrong with still carrying a physical Bible, but most people have them on their phones now, obviously.
Bibles still.
So you can't really forget it now. You just get you just click on your Bible app. So maybe he should have, in a modern day one, he could hold up the phone and say, hey, Dad, the Bible app is right here. Don't forget reading it on the way out.
No, absolutely. You remember though too, Ian, when we started doing websites for churches back in 2006 and 2007, our biggest competition was, it was direct mailers for churches, right? That was like the big thing, that because there were some discounts that they would give to nonprofits, like that was the way that most churches did their advertising, is you'd do a big mailer before Christmas, a big mailer before Easter, and try and get a big audience in there. And
or if you're launching your church, that's you just mail drop the community you're planning in. And
Absolutely. Yeah. So it was just something that you could do, and you could do it relatively affordably. So those mediums still exist. We'll talk about them a little bit as we go, but the world has certainly changed. And you'll see in our list, we have five different items we want to talk about here today. Four of the five are digital. We really think that churches should be using any or most of their budget if they're going to spend money on marketing, which we think all churches should spend something on outreach and marketing. That's important part of what we do. Most of that should be spent digitally, and the world really has changed. So let's kick it off, though. I'll talk about, I'll kind of introduce them all today, and you can kind of chime in a little bit on what you think of each of these items here. So I believe that before churches spend a single cent on any paid marketing, they should take full advantage of item number one, which is the Google grant. Churches should be getting the Google grant. For those of you that don't know, any nonprofit that can prove you're a nonprofit, so you have a 501c3 or you're part of a organization, a parent organization that has a 501c3. I'm a pastor within a denomination called Foursquare. So I have served in churches that don't have their own 501c3, but our parent organization does. You are eligible from Google for $10,000 a month of free AdWords advertising on their AdWords platform. And this is something that I find still a lot of churches don't know about it, right?
No, they don't. Yeah, surprisingly. Yeah. Now, more are catching on now, but a lot are still just clueless to it. Yep.
Yeah, and we're doing everything in our part to make churches aware of this, because it's something, it's really free money that's out there now. I am with most people. I am at a minimum skeptical of Google. This isn't some kind of a promotion for Google for us to do that necessarily. But I feel like this is something that I know that at my church, we've taken advantage of this. At churches that I've pastored, we've seen literally hundreds of people walk through our doors, many of them making a decision to follow Jesus because of money we've been able to spend in this grant here. So this is something that I think that all churches should take advantage of. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And I know we had a whole episode we covered on this very topic, and it was helpful to pastors. We actually heard from, you know, from pastors on how helpful it was and how it educated them, and that some right. of them have taken advantage since then. But yeah, I think, you know, when it, and it's important that when you talk about free money, it's in the form of AdWords marketing dollars. And if you're familiar right. with Google AdWords, this is something that many churches that they actually have a monthly budget that they pay Google for, just like you could pay yeah. for Facebook advertising, which we'll talk a little bit about too. But and businesses, of course, large, you know, businesses and small alike, they it's called pay-per-click marketing, and you get ads out there. And we know, again, everyone is Googling everything now. I don't hear yep. of too many people saying, no, I know there's other ones like Bing out there in Yahoo, but I don't think everyone's just, that's the go-to now anymore. It's Google.
I've never heard somebody say, hey, let me Bing that really quick.
Let me Bing that, or let me Yahoo that, or they'll sing the old Yahoo song. No. Yeah. But so absolutely. And so this is going to make your church more visible when people are doing related searches, or even, you know, searches that would tie to something that makes sense to send traffic to your church web presence. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So again, our thought on this is that it is something that costs church nothing. It costs your church nothing if you take advantage of this. Mm-hmm. You just have to sign up. There's a few short steps to go through. Now, some churches, or I'd say most churches, probably don't have the expertise on mm-hmm. staff to pull this off on their own, because it is not for the faint of heart learning Google's AdWords platform. You generally have to use their full scale AdWords platform. They have a smaller one that is more like a basic version. You need to use the full version to take full advantage of this. And yep. I can tell you from my own experience as someone who is pretty technical and pretty good at this kind of stuff, that in the past I tried creating AdWords campaigns with this grant on my own without having a professional do it, and I failed. So I didn't do very well until I had someone kind of professionally come in and do it. I was able to spend of that $10,000, like $25 a month. So
it was a waste. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. It was giving away $9,975.
Well, about maybe 10 extra clicks a month or something,
maybe.
Right?
Yeah, so, something like that. Yeah, it did happen that way. But I just feel like for a lot of churches, they don't have the expertise. Now, there are many, many, many companies out there that do paid AdWords management for people. We happen to do that specifically for churches at ReachRite. You know, so if you are interested in that, you can go ahead and check out our website, click on Google Grants. You'll get some information on those things. But at a minimum, I think every church should apply and at least see if you're eligible and take full advantage of this kind of a platform. Because I think that it's just such an easy no-brainer that you have 10,000. If you're going to spend any money on advertising, you should at least claim the free $10,000 that you have on this one channel here. It is not saturated yet. I can tell you that we help lots of churches with this, and there's lots of opportunity still out there. I will say that it's a little bit easier to spend that money in urban areas than it is mm-hmm. in very rural areas. Yep. So if you are in a rural area of Montana, I think you'll have a harder time than if you're in Los Angeles. But you know, I still think that there's probably value for just about anyway, especially in this season now where so much of our services are happening digitally. They're happening mm-hmm. online. They're happening where people that maybe don't live in your area are able to watch and take in your service there. So.
That's it. Yeah.
So I think that's something that's important for
churches. A lot more searches going on these days. Google searches church online or live streaming, and how great would it be if that's where your church is at for, you know, someone to see an ad for your church and they click right there, and then they can get the message and be following you.
Yeah. And one thing I'll mention too is that the mistake I see most churches make with this Google grant is they stick to very few search terms that are specifically related to people looking for churches. And that's certainly where you should start. So mm-hmm. you should, you know, put together searches for people looking for churches near me, keywords like churches or Baptist churches or Methodist churches, whatever kind of church you are. So you should have branded and church specific kind of keywords. But we'll tell you that the majority of our results come from alternative types of keywords. Now, we have a whole episode on this. So do listen into episode number 2 if you want some more information on that. But I think if you are if you're only targeting churches and church specific keywords, you'll miss out. You need to target things like prayer, other spiritual answers, theological questions, some of those kinds of things, events. Those have been really good for us. So if you're not doing this already, you should absolutely take advantage of this. If you need some help, we'd be happy to talk with you guys more about that. So learn more on our website about that. But number two, second item we'll share of the marketing channels churches should be using is Facebook and Instagram ads. Facebook and Instagram ads. This is not to be confused with just putting posts on Facebook and Instagram. That's valuable. But I think actually spending money on these channels, I think, is something that's really valuable for churches. What do you think, Ian?
Yeah, and it's very similar to kind of what we were just talking about. Even though the Google grant is free money for advertising, it's the same concept when people are searching or looking for various things on social media, which you're going to have a huge audience there too, to be found and be very visible there is key.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I just think about Facebook ads in the same way that we would, that we used to think about direct mailers. So if you put it in those kinds of terms, so we won't get too technical in the marketing side of things and some of the terminology, but in marketing, there's this term called CPM, which is cost per thousand. M is the Roman numeral for a thousand. So it's not cost per million, cost per thousand. And what that is how much does it cost to get 1,000 sets of eyeballs on my ad? How much does it cost for my ad to be displayed 1,000 times? In something like direct mail, it was through the roof. It was like 70 cents or something like that is how high it could get to have your ad viewed 1,000 times. Now, if you took advantage of nonprofit rates and you found some really cheap printing, you might get it down to much less. I'm sorry. If I said 70 cents, I meant $700 to have your ad viewed 1,000 times for people to have your mailer in their hands there. At best, it might have been something like $300 for 1,000 people to see that there. So with Facebook and Instagram, the cost is like, it can be down around $2 or $3 is how much it costs for 1,000 people to see an ad or a promotion or an invitation to church. And that is something that we've never seen that kind of value. And here's what's so amazing about it is you can be so specific in your exact right kind of target on Facebook that it's amazing. So I'll give people a little bit of perspective on what the difference is and where you should spend money on Google and where you should spend money on Facebook and Instagram. What Google does is they do more of a search-based kind of an approach. So it takes what people are typing into that search box and then it delivers the ad based on that. So it's based on what they need, whereas what Facebook does is they're usually delivering ads to people based on who they are and what their characteristics are. You're not searching something on Facebook necessarily, but they know a lot about you. They know how old you are. They know if you're married or not. They know if you're into certain kinds of hobbies or interests. They know what kind of music you like. I think most people would be really shocked to know how much information Facebook knows about them.
I've been shocked, even though we've been knowledgeable about this. It's so crazy. You know, if I'm into fitness, I work out a lot and I love music and it's just, thank you. Yeah. I'm not going to stand up for everyone or anything, but, I do recommend exercise, but no, just because of that, you know, I do a specific search all of a sudden, you know, if I'm looking for like a supplement, well, I'm going to see, it is fine tuned. It's the exact type of supplement I made a search for and I've made purchases this way. So it works. You know, I find myself clicking off of the ad onto a website to make purchases and I wasn't even planning on doing it, but it was so smart that it knew exactly what I was interested in.
So you're talking in part, so the search part, that is true. I think they have a record of everything you've searched for and then they will continue to show you ads that the marketing companies think are related to that search topic. With Facebook, it's more about what your interests are, what you like, what you don't like, the kind of news you look at. All that stuff is factored in, and they're able to make deductions about and assumptions about who you are.
Yeah.
And they basically sell that information to marketers. So we, as a company at ReachRight, we spend a lot of money with Facebook. And I know exactly how we try to get our message out to as many pastors as possible. For churches, what I would recommend, here's a big thing, is that, and I think this is maybe contentious a little bit, so I want to explain. I don't think that it's the right approach for churches to target just everybody in their area. Now, I know in theory, most churches, I've never talked to a church that actively discriminates and says, I don't want a certain kind of person, color person, financial status of a person to come to our church. I've never met a church like that.
Right.
I'm sure they exist out there, but they aren't talking to ReachRight.
No.
But I will say that I get the intent of trying to have your message go out equally to everybody and being open in that way. And I am all for that. I really agree with that. However, I think when it comes to your marketing dollars, there is value in targeting people not based on certainly race or ethnicity or financial status, because I don't think that's healthy. But I think that you can target people based on those that are most likely to respond to a church like yours, to a message like what you have there. And sometimes that's hard to figure out what that is. Like, it's hard to figure out what are, you know, so I know for our church, we would do a big harvest party or Halloween party type thing, where we would invite all kinds of people. And we realized that, you know, people like single men in their 70s, they're probably not the people that are most likely to come to our harvest party, right? They're not
if
the
they are,
right
kind
of target.
A little concerned about if they do show up looking for candy or whatever. So
So what we did is we actually got into Facebook and got into their to the target or the audience creation tool, and we said, hey, we specifically want to target a few things. One was called soccer moms. So Facebook, nobody puts into Facebook, I am a soccer mom, but they have this way of deducing whether parents are or moms are soccer moms or not. So basically what that meant for us, though, is parents that have kids in preschool and elementary school are the ones that we were trying to target. And that was much better at reaching people for our big Halloween event. That worked much better at that. Now, what most churches, if you're looking for more of a general approach, Facebook has this really great tool called a lookalike audience. And what a lookalike audience is you put in a bunch of people into Facebook. So maybe you have your church email list, for instance, right? So let's say you have 200 people on your church email list, and you put that into Facebook. And then what Facebook does is it takes those people and it finds their Facebook profiles and it says, hey, let's find people that are really close to these people that are already going to that church. So people that are kind of like the ones that you already have there. Now, am I saying that churches should always target people that look like them? No, I don't think that's always a healthy thing to do. But I think you probably have the best shot of reaching people that are all like people that are like the ones that are already there with you, because like attracts like, and that's just the way that things go. So if someone walks in they speak a different language and they are from just a totally different part of town and just different in every way from the people at your church, it'll have a harder time connecting some of those people in most cases there.
Right.
So what Facebook lets churches do is really target a specific kinds of people, and you can really narrow that down. And I think it's really a fantastic tool when it comes to marketing, not only just churches in general, but specific church events or happenings at churches. So what do you have to add, Ian?
Not much on that. I mean, that was very informative, Thomas, for sure. And I think that, that's exactly, you hit the nail on the head. Even though we know in ministry, everyone's welcome and everything, with this type of marketing, it's good to think a little bit more strategically, for sure.
Yeah, I think so too. I think I'll mention this too, and you've heard me say Facebook a lot. I say Facebook because, and I think a lot of people are thinking, well, why not Instagram? Well, really, Facebook and Instagram are the same thing, right? So Facebook and Instagram are the same company. When you do ads on these channels, it'll assume that you want to put your ads on both Facebook and Instagram and their audience network, which is, it's such a trip that churches, you could actually have your ads on national websites that are all over the country, all over the world. And people, it can be specific enough that it's only reaching people in your area, but your ads can still appear on those kinds of things. That's why a lot of times people will wonder, hey, why am I seeing, why do they know that I was looking at this specific piece of furniture when I went on to this this NBC News website? Why do they know that I'm, why are they showing me this exact thing? What a coincidence, people think.
Yeah, that, and that's that's kind of what I was referring to at the beginning of this topic, is it, you know, whether or not it was a health supplement or something like that. It's a, it's almost eerie. And I know a lot of people, when they, when this marketing first became available, they were really just, you know, apprehensive to, they thought, you know, it was almost like, you know, intruding in their privacy, you know? So, but I actually personally don't mind it so much, because then it, I can get to things I'm interested in a little bit faster.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it, it's valuable to people, and that's their whole, you know, their goal is to make money, but they're trying to do it by giving ads that people actually care about and not just things that we don't care about at all. So that makes a lot of sense, I think, that way. But yeah, I think with these first two, I'll just kind of say this as we wrap up the first two in these Google Grant and Facebook ads. We are in a an unprecedented time where the cost of advertising, it remains very, very low. And you can reach more people today than ever before for less money. And it really is something that, this is an enormous opportunity in front of churches. So I think it's something we should all really be looking at, those two areas. And we kind of ranked these in order of where you should be starting your search on this kind of stuff. So let me tackle number three. We'll introduce this, and you can chime in a little bit on your thoughts with this one too, Ian. I think, churches, number three, they need to take advantage of SEO, or search engine optimization. Now, this scares churches, right? Because it's, it sounds like it's something super technical. What this really means, like for most churches, is there's a little bit of technical to it, but mostly the, what that means is creating content on your website. That's what SEO comes down to, is that you have to get some things dialed in on your website, and there are some very specific things you can do there. But the bulk of the work in doing search engine optimization is creating lots of really, really good, really good content that people care about. That's what search engine optimization is all about. Agree?
Agreed. And a few things that you could do for that, because we talk, we consult churches on this, you know, daily, is number one thing that comes to mind as far as creating content is a blog. And you know, these, the, a blog's been out for a while, right? Blogs have been out for a while. When they first came out, everyone was like, oh, we got to do them. We get a blog. And then they get a blog up there. I remember seeing this back when we were almost going back to when we talked about when websites were first a thing and TV commercials were kind of phasing out. You know, then blogs came out and pastors would get a blog. And what we'd see is they'd get one post up there and then nothing for three months, maybe more. And so it's like, you have to count the cost with some of this stuff. A blog, if updated regularly, is very valuable. And because, I mean, it's topics of interest with good keywords that are tied to that. And you correct me if I'm wrong, Thomas, but as Google sees a blog, something like a blog being updated regularly, and it's tied to your website, that's going to give you more search engine juice and visibility, if you will, because you're keeping up with it and you're getting content that's of interest out there constantly.
Right. Yeah. So I think you're exactly right, Ian. I think when I say SEO, I think a lot of times people think of like these dark arts that people do where they try to trick Google into delivering their page or their website first by just doing a lot of technical stuff on the site. And there are things you can do now to make sure your site is technically aligned with what Google wants to see, so you get your best chance. But really, the main thing is making content that people care about and that they stay with for a long time. That's the big thing. So it's about making a blog, for instance. If you can create a post that lots of people want to read, and lots of people want to share, and lots of people want to link to, and most of all, lots of people want to stay on it for a long time while they're there. Like they want to read through it and read the whole thing. Like Google is smart to all that kind of stuff. So if you create a post and you get lots of people linking to it because you pay someone to do some dark arts with SEO and people link to it, and you have all kinds of keywords that you stuff in there for the stuff that you're looking for, but you find that people click onto it, they stay on for 4 seconds, know that it's not very good, and click off, you're never going to rank for that kind of a post, because Google is much more sophisticated now than it used to be. Back in like when we started doing this, people used to do these Google bombs all the time where they could make just about any page rank for a certain search. Like I remember that there was back in like 2006, we were in the middle of the Iraq war type thing. And when you put in the term WMD or weapons of mass destruction, you typed in WMD, somebody made a page. They were able to get it to rank. That was just a picture of like these open containers with everything was missing because nobody could find it. And it was a big kind of hacker joke that they could trick Google so easily. Now they are so much more sophisticated now than they used to be. So, all that to say that I think it is about making content. A couple of content advice pieces. I'll say, number one, Ian, you're exactly right with the blog. That's a great idea. Write longer formed posts. Has to be good, so don't just fill it with a bunch of junk. But I would prefer, like, if you're going to write less than 600 words, it probably isn't going to go anywhere. So 600 words is kind of the minimum. I think our post, for instance, at ReachWrite, we do about 2,000 words every week of a blog post. And so for a normal person, that takes probably 7 to 10 minutes to read. They stay on that site for a while. They read it. They dig through all of the content. And I can tell you, our best performing posts are ones that are really long. We have one post that is something like 7,000 words long, where it talks about the top 100 church websites in the country or in the world. And that one is consistently one of our highest volume posts because it is so long and people spend half an hour on that blog post. And Google has really thought that's really valuable. So that's one thing. Another idea is make sure you're creating content with sermons already. I think that's a huge untapped resource for content and SEO. If you put your sermons on there, here's the big mistake so many churches make. They'll put their sermon on their website. It'll have a title and that's it. It'll just be the video or the audio clip and the title. You are wasting such a huge opportunity with that. At a very minimum, you need a lengthy description, highlight your points, put in your scripture passages, that kind of stuff. I would recommend that you have every service that you do, have it transcribed. Have somebody, you could have someone within your church. There's some really great services now that can do it for not that much money. You can get your sermons transcribed. And then you have all that text content on there. It's really, if you're saying something valuable in your services, then you owe it to yourself to have that on your site. That's just two examples of content that I think that really goes a long way when it comes to SEO. Anything else to add on that?
Well, just you said something key in there, because when we talk about this, I think that a pastor could be thinking, you know, in the back of their mind, well, this is going to be a lot of work. I can't do that. But like you said, churches are already creating sermon content. A pastor is already, most pastors already have at least some sort of Google Word document with sermon points and key scriptures, and they're writing that out already. And you can almost simply, now you don't want to just do it in a sloppy way, but you can almost simply just copy and paste that within your site to give you this type of search engine juice. And so, no, I think that's a good thing to say, is that, you know, that content is easily created already by churches. So that's something that most churches can do right away without doing much extra work.
Yeah, you're like 90% there already. So it's just a matter of doing the last little bit, and it'll make a huge difference. But again, I can't stress this enough. If you put in junk content, you're going to get junk results. So,
I think, one more thing, sorry to interrupt, Thomas, but I would say too, to interject there, that, you know, I think a good way to start, when I talk to churches and they're thinking, well, how do I, what content of interest? We already know as pastors and ministry leaders that we're supposed to think about the people we're reaching more than our own internal stuff, right?
Right.
So we begin to think about what someone's going to be interested in as far as content. That's the start. Think outreach oriented. Think outside the four walls, if you will. Is a parent going to be more interested in all of a whole lengthy page of your beliefs, or how much you're going to love their kids? Yeah. And so that's one thing I wanted to sprinkle in there, is to start to think about what is of interest, because Google knows that. They know what parents are searching as far as what a parent, you know, parents looking for children's church. So I just wanted to interject. Hey,
so I'll give two pieces of advice on that, just from, you know, we do a lot of research on this for ourselves and for churches. And so I can tell you the two kinds of blog posts that I would recommend is number one is how-to posts. So answering a question that people are asking. So maybe it's how to handle screen time with my kids, or how to talk to my kids about something, some kind of an issue that they're facing. How to deal with a certain marital issue that people have. So practical how-to type posts. People will search for that content. You'll rank on that kind of stuff. Secondly, I think is list-based posts. So this is an example. What we're doing right now is a list-based post. We're talking about the five best marketing channels for churches. I think the same thing goes for a blog post. If you think about 11 encouraging scriptures that will help you get through this coronavirus season, or those kinds of list-based posts, I think those do really well also. So a couple of pieces of advice just to get people's juices flowing on that kind of stuff. Number four, let's go ahead and hit that. It not to be confused with number two, where we talked about Facebook and Instagram ads. I think that if a church wants to get serious about marketing in 2020, they should look at organic social media results. And probably they should consider investing something in this area. And when we talk about organic posts, we're not giving money to Facebook. What this means, when you invest in that area, that means investing in someone or some people or a team that actually take your social media channels really, really seriously and are creating content. Again, back to that same term, creating content for your social media channels. I think you probably ought to consider that you need a champion for this in your church. For lots of pastors, I guess it could be you, but just realize that people that are good on social media, they are not doing this for 5 minutes a day. You know, they're not just kind of casually posting as they're thinking about stuff.
Here's the scripture of the day. Bye bye.
Right? No, it's not that simple. It really takes someone that is thinking strategically and creating content that is actually shareable and commentable and likable and just putting out that kind of stuff. So I think that's something that's really important. What do you think?
Yeah. And I just gave a funny example. I did nothing wrong with doing the word for the day or scripture for the day. That's good stuff to do on Facebook or a devotional thing, but you want to change it up. You want to get creative and do more than just that. And not, cause I think when we saw this, getting back to our beginning stages of consulting churches in this industry, was when Facebook, it was first a thing. That's what churches did. They would post either a little thought for the day, a devotional type thing, or then their next event coming up. Those things are still relevant, but there's a lot more content that you can think through and get creative. And so find that champion that is good at it, because they're going to think of things like sharing stories, you know, personal testimonies. They're going to think of other just, you know, sharing different articles and commenting on those articles as far as food for thought and so on. So there's a lot more to be done there and to think creatively through.
Yep, absolutely. We said before on a previous podcast that we think that the communications director is probably the most important role in a church after the pastor nowadays. So I think it's something that this is the person. It's probably your communications director, but this is the first person I would invest in financially in a church nowadays, because this is such an important area of delivering your message, your church's message, the message of Jesus out to your community. This is the channels that we do it in now. So I think investing in that area is something that most churches probably should consider. I'm not saying that most churches need a full-time social media person, but I think this probably is one person that is maybe working on some SEO stuff and creating content and blog posts, and they're also doing social media posts. But I think with social media, the term that I really love, this is not original to us, Brady Shearer over at Pro Church Tools, he says this: the goal for churches should be to stop the scroll, to get people as they're scrolling through those social channels, just that it doesn't have to be something that is totally profound all the time. Sometimes just stopping them and getting people to notice you and maybe having a conversation, it goes a long, long way in building out your social profile there that way. So I think that's really smart advice. Other than that, I would just say that it's not always a volume play, but volume is probably important, especially on channels like Twitter. I think having lots of volume is something that's really important there. If you are using Facebook and Instagram, volume is not as important because they have some throttling. So if you're posting 15 different posts every single day on Facebook, you're not going to get 15 times the results as you would if you're just doing once. There's diminishing returns for every single post that you're doing out there. I think on all channels, something like once a day would be great.
Right.
You should make it that target if you could create good content that way. So let's maybe talk a little bit about channels, though. We're talking about organic social media. What channels, if you were to rank them, what channels do you think churches should be using? Where should churches start when it comes to social media? Like, what platform should they be on?
Well, you know, that's a good question. You know, I think now we might be, if you're a younger church, let's just say you're a millennial church, right? That just that's your pastor, and that's, it might be Instagram. I still think, though, Facebook is probably the place to start. Overall, they still have more people that you'll be reaching there. But I think now Instagram is depending upon the demographics that you're trying to reach, is also very close second. But I'd say I think it's still Facebook first.
Yeah, I think so, too. So Facebook is certainly the most used. So everybody on Instagram still has Facebook accounts. So you got to remember they are one company. They're one of the same. So it really isn't hard to do both if you're doing one or the other. But Instagram, I think people like it because it's always photo based. And so it's much less political stuff typically. But it does limit you also when you can't link off to your site as easily through Instagram because you can't have links in your post. That's why whenever you see someone on an Instagram post say link in bio, that's because they can't put a link in there. They're trying to keep people on the platform. Whereas Facebook, you can have a lot more freedom with that and delivering links off to your site, signups for events, those kinds of things there. So Facebook, Instagram. I think on a personal level, leaders within your church should be using Twitter. I think it's a great place for people to get their own. I think people are looking more for individual relationship on Twitter. Yeah. That's a great place. Churches probably should have a LinkedIn profile. I think, I don't know that you need to, I think if you're writing blog posts, you can share them on LinkedIn really easily. You're not going to be updating that with little, you know, pithy jokes and that kind of stuff as much because it's much more of a professional kind of an environment. I think churches, I know there's a lot of drama and controversy about this right now, but TikTok, that's something that you can't really ignore right now. Making a TikTok video that is actually good can really go far. There's no more viral of a channel right now than TikTok, I would say. Yeah. So I know with the Chinese ownership and stuff, it's kind of a tricky, we don't want to get into that minefield. That's not our job here. But I think if your goal is to reach especially young people.
Podcast and a different someone else.
A different podcast altogether. One we're going to touch with
not
a 10-foot
pole. Not one we're
going
to do. No.
Yeah, that's it. So anyway, so I think those are some of the channels that churches should be looking at. Don't overlook YouTube also. That is, while it is a video platform and a place for content, it is absolutely a social media channel from the comments that are on there to the interaction, to the liking and the sharing. It functions exactly like a social media platform. So that's number four. Get serious about your social media and getting organic results there. And last, and I was going to say not least, but probably least. I still think that there is a place for some physical advertising for churches. When we talk about that, we're talking about signage, possibly direct mail with some of the new things the post office offers there, those kinds of things. There could still be a place for that, billboards, those kinds of things, because there's still value in people having something in their hand or driving by something every single day, seeing that repetition, having something physical. There is some value to that. Now, I think the first four things, the difference is your results are much less expensive than they are with the physical things. Yeah. I know what billboards cost. I know what direct mail costs. Church signage can be really expensive to install, but it does kind of keep reproducing on itself, though. So do you think? You were telling me earlier about your church seeing some results on that. What do you think there?
Well, our church, you know, being a larger church, we actually, it's funny, we were donated a billboard, so it was taken care of by a member, so that was a very generous thing. Yeah. So not every church is going to have someone that generous, right? Or someone in the billboard business that can do that. But we still see, we're off, you know, of a prominent highway that goes straight through the city. And so, you know, and we're, when I say our location is not far off the highway, and we have a lot of people coming from north of Austin where we're at. And so we have had people that have said, hey, we've seen your billboards and, you know, we love that you're a church for everyone and all fam and a family oriented church. We saw that, you know, and that's why we came. So we get that feedback still, surprisingly. Yeah. And I mean, you know, I think that, boy, you got to be careful looking at, I think, back before texting and driving was a thing, you could probably get away with glancing at a billboard a little bit more. Now you got to be very careful. I think if my eye catches a, and the way people drive now while texting and now they're driving with masks sometimes, it's a crazy thing driving on the highway, right? So you have all of this external stimuli, if you will. And then you see a billboard, you might just catch for like millisecond. But it still can stand out. It can still have your brand, and it still kind of can stick in someone's mind eye. So
yeah, I still remember that the first church I learned about when I moved to Texas back in 2007 is I saw your church and I saw your pastor and his wife and I saw their sparkly white teeth. And I was like, boy, look at that. That's something else. And I still etched into my brain. So we're not here to bash on legacy type media type stuff. I just think that if you don't have a donor giving it to you, it can be very expensive. Right. And I do think that most churches probably ought to invest in their signage if they have a physical location that they meet at and it is their own, and you can put up signage, banners, those kinds of things there. We had a guy at the church I pastored in Northern California. We were on a highway there and we had a sign, and I'll never forget. He came to church one Sunday after he saw the sign on the street, and he said he came having driven by so many times, and he called me. When I did kind of the visitor follow-up, he called me back and he said, yeah, I saw the sign. I came in, and then I don't know if this is right or not, but I just prayed this prayer where I said, you know, that that song by Carrie Underwood, that Jesus Take the Wheel. I just asked God to take the wheel. And I said, great. You did exactly right. Yeah. Welcome to the kingdom. And so I talked to him a little bit more about what it means to be a Christian and helped him kind of, you know, make sure that he made the right kind of decision with those kinds of things. And it was really a trip. Good. So I am for signage. I am confident that people will be in heaven because of direct mailers, because of signs they've seen, because of billboards. I think that there is a place for that when churches have probably exhausted some of these other areas and you've spent your budget there and you have more to invest. I think you can start to look at those places, but I think digital is where it's at here in 2020. You agree?
Agreed. Totally.
Awesome.
I think most people know that now.
Yeah. So we'll be doing some other deep dives. We have done some in on these topics in other podcasts. We have some other ones that are planned out to come in the future here. So if you want to learn more about any one of these in specifics, we'd love to share some of that with you guys. So stay tuned to those kinds of things. Thank you guys so much for listening and watching. We've heard some great feedback from people already. We've seen some people. We've been able to help some people with the Google Grant and that stuff. That's been really awesome to hear. That's our heart in being able to help people, help churches reach people the right way. That's what we're all about here at Reach Right There. So if you haven't already, we'd love it if you would subscribe at Apple Podcasts or iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe on YouTube. You can do that there too.
Spotify. You can, I use Spotify.
Absolutely. Yeah. I use Google Podcasts personally. Spotify has some exclusives that I listen to on there too that I do podcasts on. So anyway, that'll do it for this week though, guys. Thank you for watching and listening, and we'll catch you next time.
See you guys.
Thanks for listening to the Reach Right podcast. We hope this episode will help you reach people the right way. Looking for more resources for your church? Check us out online at reachrightstudios.com. If this episode has been helpful to you, it would mean the world to us if you would rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.